This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
At any time there was a proposition to, yes, impose the values of liberal societies on the incoming minorities.
This is probably the most shocking bit of the entire interview. She talks candidly and audaciously about imposing Western values on immigrant populations.
That is one side of the story, but there's also another side of the story.
There's two sides of the story when Jordan Peterson talks about slavery and segregation and racism in the West, but she doesn't offer the same charitable interpretations of two sides of the story when she's talking about the Muslim world. It's the Hijab 10 discount code for 10% discount on a wide range of products, including premium Ethiopian black seed products. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you guys doing? This is a video of review. A review of an interview that recently took place between I and Hersey Ali and Jordan Peterson. Now, before I indulge in the Floxy Norsen nihilipilification of the counterfactual and inoperative pontifications of I and Hersey Ali, I would like to stress one point. That both individuals are not specialists in Islam or Muslims. They are really not academically qualified or trained to deal with these matters. And it would have been clever had both of those individuals taken a page out of Wittgenstein's book, Tractus, where he mentions whereof one cannot speak, thereof one must remain silent. But despite the fact that Jordan Peterson consistently mentions his own ignorance on the topic of Islam and Muslims, he continuously and persistently calls people who are ultra-crepidarian and who have no formal qualifications of Islam except for a claim that they once belonged to the body of Muslims to speak on his podcasts as if they have some kind of academic insight to offer. What we will realize with this review instead is that there is no academic insight to offer. Let's start with exactly the method that we're talking about. In this case, it's the social scientific method. But before we do so, let's recognize the argument that's being made here by I and Hersey Ali, that there is a correlation, a strong positive correlation between immigration and sexual violence to women. In particular, this among many other problems that you'll find with immigration. And what kind of immigration? It's Muslim immigration in particular. So, the first thing that needs to be questioned is I and Hersey Ali going to provide us with scientific or statistical data such that we may look at it with an academic eye? Or is she going to be anecdotal from beginning to end? Unfortunately, what we find with this interview is that there is absolutely no semblance of academic rigor. And in fact, the entirety of the interview is a reference to anecdotal information with the limitation of one case study, Hersey herself talking about her own story, which Peterson thinks she's so heroic for having gone through these experiences. But Jordan Peterson asks Hersey a question. He actually says, I'm triggered as a social scientist because there's many issues.
I mean, you do say right off the bat, this is a trigger warning for the entire book. Reading it, you should be triggered. Well, I would say I was triggered by reading it. I was triggered partly as a social scientist, I would say, to begin with.
And he mentions, of the issues in question, is the fact that how do you define sexual violence against women? Let's take a look at what he says.
How do you define sexual assault, for example? Now, you could define it as, if you define it by the most severe crimes, let's say rape, then you miss all the data that might be obtained when you consider all the other forms of sexual misbehavior.
Now, this problem is real because in second wave feminist kind of academic literature, you'll find extremes. You'll find extremes like, for example, MacKinnon, Catherine MacKinnon, who says that sexual intercourse is a form of rape, actually. Even if the person consents. This is in Western academic literature. I know Jordan Peterson has had Warrell Farrin on his podcast in the past, and he's been critical of these approaches. And Warrell Farrin himself mentions in The Myth of Male Power these ridiculous notions of definitions relating to sexual violence. Hirsi Ali doesn't recognize the issue here with definitions, and she doesn't realize because there is no uniform, generalizable, robust definition that everybody agrees with in relation to this violence against women, such that comparisons can be made cross-culturally or even within the same location. So she starts talking once again about anecdotes. But Jordan Peterson comes back again and asks her some more interrogatory questions. What's really interesting is that at minute 12, second 38, Ayaan Hirsi candidly admits that she does not start with statistics. Let's see what she has to say.
And so I don't start first with statistics. So I'm not a social scientist.
Now that's ridiculous. Not the fact that she's not a social scientist, but the fact that you're conducting a study which is a social science study, and you're admitting that you have no qualification, no expertise, no training, no ability to act as a social scientist. Now, this is analogous to someone going to a doctor, asking for a prescription, and then the doctor turns around and says, you know, I don't start with prescriptions because I'm not a doctor. It would not be acceptable in any other field. So why is it possible that she can be treated as an academic and a social scientist when in fact she admits to the fact that she is an ultra-crepidarian? Why is it possible that she can continue this and that there is not a push from Peterson? As we've seen with him and Cathy Newham, for example, on Channel 4, a debate, well-known debate, the same push that he has with other second-wave feminists, where he completely dismantles their dualist narratives, we don't find here. There's an acquiescence here. And I think the reason is this. If Ayaan Hirsi Ali was Cathy Newham, he would have eaten her for breakfast in that interview.
But you're exercising your freedom of speech to certainly risk offending me. And that's fine. I think more power to you, as far as I'm concerned.
So you haven't sat there and... I'm just trying to work that out. I mean...
Ha, gotcha.
You have got me.
But he acquiesces to her lack of rigor and sophistication, academic sophistication, because she exists with him in the same anti-Muslim echo chamber. And that's the reality, and he knows it. When was the last time that Jordan Peterson has ever, in his entirety of his career, professional career, invited a traditionalist Muslim, and there are many of us, to come and discuss with him the matters that he's discussing with Ayaan Hirsi Ali? Why only the unsympathetic to Muslims? Why? Even though they come with the most ridiculous anecdotal evidence to make generalizable cases on an entirety of a population, which is the Muslim population in the West. Why? So this is something that you should be really thinking about.
For instance, my husband saying the argument won't go anywhere because you will not be able to get the statistics.
Once again, she says, I don't have the data. And he once again is the softball approach, not pushing, not attacking, because she's not from the left, because she's not a white second wave feminist woman from the left. That's why he's dealing with her in that way. And because she has this bias against Islam and she echoes a lot of their sentiments, the right wing, let's be honest, alt-right wing sentiments. That's why he's taking it easy with her. Even though she is telling him, I don't have any data. He should have said, if you don't have any data, you don't have any case. That's what you should have said. Full stop. Her books are littered with anecdotal information, which even that is questionable. And you can see in the other refutation I've done on her, even that is questionable and has been fact-checked, and she has been proven to be a malignant liar on all of these issues.
victims and perpetrators of violent crimes, about 50% of them are alcohol intoxicated. It's a massive contributor to violence of all types, domestic violence, every type of violence.
At minute 28, he starts talking about other factors, one of which is alcohol, something which is a prohibition in Islam. And she can see the discomfort in the face of Ayan Hirsi, because now it's moving away from anti-Islamic attack to almost seemingly a pseudo pro-Islamic stance, because Islam is the only major world religion which bans alcohol. And he talks about alcohol being, in his words, 50% or more the reason why a lot of these attacks happen against women. She tries to sidestep that and move it back to an anti-Islamic case. But she is losing sophistication. She unnuances the discussion and she's just trying to squeeze in. She is desperately trying to squeeze in an anti-Islamic narrative at every single turn. But Jordan Peterson does not care, because Jordan Peterson is happy to acquiesce with that. And Jordan Peterson is happy to have these unsympathetic Muslim, anti-Muslim people on his show, like Gad Saad or whatever his name is, and Hirsi Ali and Sam Harris. You're all, quite frankly, you have one thing in common, which is you echo the same nonsense when it comes to Islam, and you are afraid. You are afraid to come out of your echo chambers. You are afraid. This is probably the most shocking bit of the entire interview. She talks candidly and audaciously about imposing Western values on immigrant populations.
At any time there was a proposition to, yes, impose the values of liberal societies on the incoming minorities, there would be an opposition to that. There still is an opposition to that.
Now imagine me saying the same thing about Islam. Let's impose Islam upon... if I was speaking in a context where Islam was the majority or the dominant ethic, and we're talking about immigrants to Muslim lands, I say exactly the same thing. I'll be labeled a fascist, an authoritarian. Impose the Islamic values on oncoming non-Muslim populations. Imagine I said that in relation to non-Muslim immigrants in a Muslim land. Everyone would say this is brutal authoritarianism and fascism. But the man who seems to be, or he's putting himself out to be, a figure, an emblem for free speech and expression and liberalism in the West, Jordan Peterson, instead of having the courage to challenge Ayan Hirsi Ali on this very statement, he acquiesces and moves on. And in fact, seems to even agree with the sentiment, which baffles me to the point of asking this question. To what extent can liberalism, ostensibly an ideology of tolerance, tolerate anything other than itself? And you have Jordan Peterson, who is meant to be the bastion of free speech and freedom of expression, who is acquiescing to this once again because of his cognitive bias towards Islam and Muslim, instead of challenging her on this. In fact, Jordan Peterson speaks of immigration in this kind of language. He says,
the simplest explanation could well be that Canada's geographical position has protected it against many of the events, or shielded us against many of the events that have made immigration such a contentious issue.
As if immigrants are some kind of threat, some extraneous threat that require shielding from. In that they're coming with these new ideas and cultures that are going to undermine your cultures. You're scared. You're scared of anyone challenging the dominant ethic. You need to be shielded from it. That is what I see from your, from the parlance, from the language that you are using.
I think we, and how would you address when you're criticized for being a neo-colonist, let's say?
Peterson seems to actually even agree with this imposition narrative by playing devil's advocate and saying, well, some may accuse us of being neo-colonists. Peterson is not only acquiescing with Hirsi, But he seems to agree with her on this narrative. And it's only at minute 53, second 45, where he has the conversation that he needs to have. Or he asks the question which he needs to have, which is, should we assume the primacy of values? No, we shouldn't assume the primacy of values. Let's take a look at what he has to say.
Do you think that there is a danger in the Western assertion of primacy of value, for example? And is that such a danger that it mitigates against any attempts to assimilate immigrants, for example?
How can you assume the primacy of values without having an epistemological basis for doing so, without arguing from first principles? So what you're saying effectively is this: immigrants have to come in, we should assume the primacy of our values over theirs, and we should impose it on them without even trying to argue with them in rational ways for them to believe in what we believe. This to me is the biggest indication of a failure of values. What kind of values are these? This is exactly the colonial approach. And yes, you will be criticized of that, and you know why. And then she starts talking about the prevalence of sexually transmitted disease at minute 56.
Unwanted diseases, unwanted babies, rapes and sexual violence, all of that in Western societies seem to be really different.
As if there's kind of this Western kind of exclusivity. No, there's no such thing. And she hasn't offered us any data and what sexually transmitted diseases she's talking about and comparative to what. So once again, she does not have any facts in front of her. She's just ready to spill over her. She's ready to speak about her anecdotes, but she doesn't really have any facts to talk about.
So you contrast an Islamic attitude towards women with a Western attitude towards women.
Now, what she doesn't want to get into is a theological discussion because she has no knowledge on this topic. So when it comes to comparison, now it's going to be quite complicated because which kind of Islam are we talking about? Which kind of Judeo-Christianity are we talking about? Is Judaism similar? Judaism has a halakha, has a system of ethics or a law system, which is similar to Sharia and Islam. Christianity doesn't have that. There are nuances that need to be discussed and fleshed out. Nuances that actually Ayan Hirsi Ali will not have no business and has no expertise in being able to answer this question. So she diverts this question. She's good for nothing, really, quite frankly, in this conversation. She diverts this question and starts talking about other things.
They like the gadgets and the nuclear weapons and that sort of modern stuff that makes them feel dominant.
It's just the kind of way she speaks. She says that the Muslims, as if we're one monolith. There's not X amount of countries that are Muslim countries at one quarter of the world's population or whatever it may be, according to Pew. We're one monolith, one block. And she says, yeah, these Muslims are only like advancements and so on when it relates to nuclear weapons and other gadgets like that. Nuclear weapons. So she's trying to kind of create associative links between Muslims and nuclear weapons. Well, the only ones who have detonated nuclear weapons are the United States of America. They have the most nuclear weapons. What are you talking about? There's only one Muslim country with nuclear weapons, which is Pakistan. So what on earth are you talking about? We only like nuclear weapons. It seems like you're projecting your own insecurities, your own Western insecurities onto us. What are you talking about? Bring some facts or be quiet and go home. With all due respect, you have nothing to add. You have nothing to add.
That is one side of the story, but there's also another side of the story.
There's two sides of the story. When Jordan Peterson talks about slavery and segregation and racism in the West, she goes, there's two sides of the story. You know, but she doesn't offer the same charitable interpretations of two sides of the story when she's talking about the Muslim world. So why is there only two sides of the story with the West and there's no two sides of the story anywhere else? See, this should show any sincere person, quite frankly, any sincere person who's looking for the truth, that these people are just, quite frankly, stuck in their echo chamber. They make it seem like they're academics and they're open-minded and they love free speech, but honestly, they don't. Because they don't platform people that have diametrically opposed on some issues, opinions to them. They don't give people who support what they're opposed to an equal footing, and they don't give us, they will not give us an opportunity to discuss these matters with them. And quite frankly, listen, before I would have been quite happy to go on Jordan Peterson's program and so on. But now that I've seen that he's talking about imposing values on us, and we're talking about like cattle, we are these animals that need to have values imposed upon us and so on. They are parents and we are the children, the Muslim children, who need to be taught parental agent. We need to be infantilized by the Western white man and his project. Yes, we the Muslims need to come in and be infantilized by them. To be honest, unless Jordan Peterson or anyone like him wants to give us equal footing and see us as equal people, not some infants that he can impose his values on, and he's going to speak us with snobbery and arrogance. He's going to arrogate his views upon us. We don't want to even have a conversation with them. Unless they can guarantee that, look, we see you as equals in this conversation and so on. We're not begging you to go on your platform, quite frankly. We're not begging this. Some people are going to say, oh, you did this to try and make a noise so you can go on his platform. No, to be honest, I don't care. I've got my own platform. I'm saying what I need to say. If he wants to speak to me, he can, with all due respect. There are things that I know he doesn't know. There are things I'm trained on that he's not trained on. And yes, we can help him out in his ignorance with Islam. And that's how we're putting it. But I'm not going to come and beg him, oh, please come on my platform. You know what? I offer it to you. But if you want to infantilize the Muslim community and impose values on them, my friend, we don't need you. With all due respect, we don't need you or Hirsi Ali, who's an ignoramus, who has no business talking about Islam or Muslims. And we don't need any of you in this dark web fraternity that you have of anti-Muslim apologists who cannot summon the courage and bravery to speak to somebody on the other side. But already this is on the public record. And my guess is it's going to get hundreds of thousands of views. And even if it gets 100,000 views, it'll be enough. It'll be enough to counter the damage that you've done. And no longer are we going to just sit there on the sidelines waiting for you and your friends, yeah, to talk about us as if you know who we are and what we believe in. You don't. So to be honest, after I've seen this interview, I mean, before we were kind of not sure where you stand, Jordan Peterson. We were not sure where you stand, whether you were sincerely a person who was looking for truth and didn't care where it came from, to a person who just has, quite frankly, people that are anti-Islamic apologists and academics who are unsympathetic to Islam, like Sam Harris, like Gerd Saad, like Ayan Hirsi Ali, and like Majid Nawaz, who still calls himself a Muslim, but the traditional Muslim community do not accept him. You only have those people on, and you only speak to those people about Islam. So, and not only that, you acquiesce to their nonsense, where we know you have the tools in your arsenal to be able to unpack what they believe in. So here's what I say to you, Jordan Peterson. If you want to engage with someone who does not agree with your paradigm and worldview, we're here. We're here, we can have those discussions. Don't be afraid, don't be scared. We're here, we can have those discussions. But what we won't accept, quite frankly, is an infantilizing and arrogating and self-congratulating, narcissistic type of colonial, yes, neo-colonial attitude where you're saying, we're going to impose our views on these immigrants coming in and we believe in primacy of values, or we're questioning whether we believe in primacy of values or not, and we're going to impose those views. And yes, that's something, that is the plan. Even though we don't have data, as we've seen with Ayan Hirsi Ali, we don't have data to support that actually the allegations that are being made, and that's what they are, they're sociological allegations about the Muslim community, right, are in any way linked to Islam as a religion or the Muslim community as a people. So if you want to have a conversation which is fruitful with people within the Muslim community, we are here at your service. But if you continue trying to evade those conversations, with all due respect, it is a kind of academic cowardice. And you can continue doing these sly things and saying, oh, I'm ignorant about Islam, but bring on all the anti-Islamic apologists and people that are anti-Islamic to your show. We're not fools. We know what's going on. And the offer is there. The offer is there. All you have to do is send me an email with your name on the title, and I will respond to it. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.